Good morning, everyone. If you would grab a Bible, let's turn to Matthew chapter 19. Matthew 19. And we'll begin in that place, and then we'll be turning to one other that will be the main text for our thoughts this morning. This is the part of our worship where we open up the Word of God and we hear from God. We see what God has to say that will be relevant in our lives and how we can bridge the gap between God's Word and how He wants us to live today. So thank you so much for your presence this morning. Especially, I want to say a word of welcome to our visitors. We always have visitors here. We always want you to feel welcome. We don't want anything from you. We're not trying to sell you something. We are a group of people who are just disciples of Jesus. We follow Him. He has changed our lives. We're trying to be like Him, and we want to work together toward that goal so that not only are we growing, but also we're calling to others to follow Him the way we've chosen to follow Him. So we want that for you, and if there's some way we can help you to connect with Him, something you need to know, some question you have, some urgent need that you have, please let us know about that. But we want you to feel welcome. Thank you for being here. Matthew chapter 19 and verse 3, Matthew 19 and verse 3, it says, "The Pharisees came up to Him," that's Jesus, "and tested Him by asking, 'Is it lawful to divorce one's wife for any cause?' And as Jesus answers that, look down in verse 9, we'll skip over part of His answer for our purposes this morning. In verse 9, He says, 'I say to you, whoever divorces his wife, except for sexual immorality, and marries another, commits adultery.' Verse 10, the disciples said to Him, 'If such is the case of a man with his wife, it is better not to marry.' But He said to them, 'Not everyone can receive this saying, but only those to whom it is given. For there are eunuchs who have been so from birth, and there are eunuchs who have been made eunuchs by men. And there are eunuchs who have made themselves eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. Let the one who is able to receive this, receive it.'" So the Pharisees approach Jesus and they ask Him a question about divorce. You see that in verse 3. And Jesus is strongly pro-marriage, or if you want to say it this way, He is anti-divorce. He argues that divorce is not God's will for people. And He gives in verse 9 only one exception to that, which is the idea of sexual immorality, presumably within a marriage. But I want you to notice the disciples' reaction to Jesus' teaching. In verse 10, "If such is the case of a man with his wife, it is better not to marry." That is, that level of permanence, that level of commitment is so high that it might be better to stay single. That's what they say. Singleness would be better than marriage. And so Jesus responds to that in verse 11. "Not everyone can receive this saying." I believe what He means is not everybody can live the way you're talking about, where they just decide not to marry because the stakes are so high. Not everyone can receive this saying, but only those to whom it is given. And He talks about eunuchs in verse 12. And I especially want to focus your attention on that last part. There are eunuchs who have made themselves eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. That is Jesus' way of describing being celibate, being a eunuch. And He says there are different reasons why people may be celibate or single, but there are some people who choose to be single, who embrace it for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. And He also, in verse 11, talks about singleness as a gift. And I want to think about that with you for a minute this morning. I want to spend some time talking about the gift of singleness, that there are some people for whom this is their life. And Jesus says that's something that we can embrace and accept and even welcome as the people of God. By my count, and yes, I did count in the directory, more than a third of the members of this church are single. So if you were to take, we got three sections here, just take any one of the sections and say, that third of the church, that's how many people we have here who are single. And that is not only a large group of people, but it is also a diverse group. Because some of us are involuntarily single. That is, they're single, but they do not want to be. So that would include the group whose spouses have died. Some of us here are divorced, and some of us would like to be with someone, but for a variety of reasons are not. And then there are some people who are voluntarily single. I did not poll our single people. Some are voluntarily single, though they are single because they choose to. They may not have found the person that they want, or it could be that they think their state now is best for them, at least for the present and for their situation. But I want you to think about that. Some of us are single, and with that comes some grief and some pain and very often disappointment. And usually in the church, we just don't do a very good job of addressing that. If you are in a local church, you will hear lots and lots of sermons about marriage. So just think about that. If a third of our group is single, do we hear a third of the sermons on singleness? I don't think. I think in 40 plus years of attending church, I may have heard one. The percentages don't add up. So I thought, well, you know what? I preach. Maybe I could do that and change that balance a little bit. So I'd like to speak to that. I would like to speak to those of us who are single and are wondering what that means. For those who feel like they don't know what their life is like without someone else. Maybe they're not even sure there is a life or a path for them because they're single, if they're not with someone. I'd like to speak to those who are frustrated because they don't know what to do because their spouse is no longer with them or their spouse has left them. And though I know I'm not single, and I know that that might lead some of you single people to dismiss me easily, what I want to do is share the New Testament perspective on singleness. That's my goal. That singleness is a gift, not a burden, not an incompleteness, not a struggle. So what we're going to do is spend our time in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 this morning. So I'd like you to turn over to that text, 1 Corinthians chapter 7. And I want you to see what Paul, who was a single man at the time of this writing, has to say about singleness and how Christians should view and live in this state. Now, 1 Corinthians 7, I'm sure for those who are familiar with it, you understand it is a very difficult text. And we're not going to study straight through it for both time's sake and because some of the things here are not relevant to us. But the Corinthians have written to Paul about their relationships. Like us, they had a variety of relationships in the church there, and they had questions about what it means to be a Christian. Some of them were single, some of them were widows, some of them were married, some of them were in what we might call a mixed marriage, a marriage to an unbeliever, and they wanted to know about what Paul's thoughts about that were. And behind their questions, as I read it, is a kind of restlessness. I'll come back to this again and again. I want you to hear me because I think we can connect with the restlessness. A restlessness that says, does the fact that I become a Christian mean that I need to change my relationships? Do I need to get married if I'm single? Do I need to divorce an unbeliever? Is marriage and sex bad? Something to be avoided? And Paul is going to answer those questions by generally saying, no, you don't have to change everything about your relational status just because you've become a Christian. Stay where you are. That's his general tone, and that includes single people. Look in verse 1. He says, now concerning the matters about which you wrote, they had written him some questions, it is good for a man not to have sexual relations with a woman. I think this is a quote from what they're asking. Is this the good thing? That they're asking, should we just avoid sex altogether? And Paul says in verse 2, no, that each one can have his own mate, his own wife, or each woman her own husband. He's saying that part of what the marriage relationship is for has to do with sexual behavior. But verse 7, in verse 7, he says, I wish that all were as I myself am, but each has his own gift from God, one of one kind and one of another. To the unmarried and the widows, I say that it is good for them to remain single as I am, but if they cannot exercise self-control, they should marry, for it is better to marry than to burn with passion. So he says, I encourage you to remain as I am, remain single like me. He thinks there are advantages to this. And I also want you to notice that in verse 7, he says singleness is a gift. Again, a gift from God, and that there are ways you can live as a single person that reflect and honor the gift God has given you in this moment. It can be a unique blessing, not just something to be avoided or to be rushed out of, but something good. So the question we're going to answer from our text is, how should a single Christian live? And the first thing I want to show you here is that Paul says a single Christian should pursue contentment. Pursue contentment. See, a huge part of this discussion, I hope you hear it, I'm going to keep saying it over and over again because I really want to change the way we think about it so that we're more in line with the New Testament. And so a huge part of this discussion is seeing singleness as a gift, not a curse, not a problem, not something missing, but instead saying, what's good about this? How can I be content where I am? And I mentioned that there is a restlessness behind the text. Do we need to change everything? And Paul says, no, where you are is good. Don't feel like you have to change this. So let's read a few verses here. Verse 8, in 1 Corinthians 7 and verse 8, to the unmarried and the widows, I say that it is good for them to remain single. as I am. It is good, he says, to remain single. Verse 10, to the married I give this charge, not I, but the Lord. The wife should not separate from her husband. So here he says, it's good to remain in your marriage. Good, stay there. Verse 12, to the rest I say, I, not the Lord, that if any brother has a wife who is an unbeliever and she consents to live with him, he should not divorce her. So in other words, it's good to remain in your marriage even if your partner is not a Christian. That is good. Verse 25, now concerning the betrothed, I have no command from the Lord, but I give my judgment as one who by the Lord's mercy is trustworthy. I think that in view of the present distress, it is good for a person to remain as he is. Are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be free. Are you free from a wife? Do not seek a wife. It's good, he says, for betrothed people to stay single if they feel they need to. Don't seek to be free if you're married. Don't seek a wife if you're not. Learn to be content where you are. Verse 39, a wife is bound to her husband as long as he lives, but if her husband dies, she is free to be married to whom she wishes, only in the Lord. Yet in my judgment, Paul says, she is happier if she remains as she is. And I think I too have the Spirit of God. Even widows and widowers, he says, I think you're free to remarry, he makes that clear, but you may be happier, and I think you will be happier where you are. Doesn't that sound strange to modern ears? That it's good that you can be content wherever you are. Now I understand, and I want you to understand that part of Paul's advice here is modified by what he talks about in verse 26, where he describes a present distress. In view of the present distress, this is good. And that's probably, as I read it, a persecution that is going on in this time that puts some pressure on relationships. It's hard to be in a relationship when you're worried about, are we going to go to prison? Or are we going to survive the day because we are Christians? But even if this is not advice for all times, he still operates from the perspective that a Christian is capable of contentment in whatever life station they are in. Single, you can be content. Widow, you can be content. Married, you can be content. In a marriage that's not what you want it to be, you can be content. Pursue contentment. Do not think that changing your relational status will make you happy. This is one of the dangers singleness brings. That if I just found the right person, then all my problems would be solved. Then I would finally have everything I want. Then my life could begin. Then I could live happily ever after. And you know, we get sold that by a lot of people in our time. And here is Paul saying, as a single man, it's good, you can be happy or you can be content right where you are. I think we need to look this in the eye, brothers and sisters. By the way, married people are not exempt from this discussion right here. I do not need another person to be content. I don't need another person so that my life honors Christ. Another person is not going to solve all my problems. Now, I understand I'm talking to a wide group here, as I mentioned, and there can be a lot of pain in these situations. For those whose spouses have died, we miss our mates. For those who are divorced, maybe we have frustration and resentment and disappointment, or maybe we are lonely and we yearn for someone else. But Paul speaks as a single man, and he says, as a single man, you need to pursue contentment wherever you are. That's why I asked Daniel to read for us from Philippians 4, where Paul says, I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. This is the Christian perspective. Remember, Jesus was a single man. Paul was a single man. And they say, yes, there are things to learn about marriage, but don't think that your life is incomplete just because you're single. That's not the Christian perspective. Pursue contentment. So in our culture, we'll talk about this more tonight. By the way, I am going to be speaking again tonight because Mark was gracious and swapped with me because I wanted to take over and do this sermon and a marriage sermon combined this week. So thank you, Mark. They may not thank you tonight, but we're going to talk about marriage tonight. We'll talk more about this. But in our culture, people are hard on marriage right now. Fewer people are getting married. Marriage is viewed as sort of restrictive and old-fashioned. And you know, in our time, singleness means something different. it means you can be promiscuous without any ramifications. You know, you can just do whatever you want, and you can sleep around, and you don't have any ties to anyone, and that seems like the best life, although I'm not sure people are as happy as they claim they are with that lifestyle. But that's not really that's the broader culture, but that's not the way Christian culture works. You know that in Christian culture, among Christians, the pressure is very different. We battle the belief that something is wrong with me if I'm not married, that I got a problem that needs to be solved. So maybe we feel like we're resentful at members of the opposite sex because we feel rejected by them. Or maybe we're waiting for Mr. or Miss Right to come along and finally, you know, give us meaning and hope and a purpose and a plan for life. Or maybe we just feel lonely and we want someone, or maybe we want an intimate partner, or we want someone who will notice us, who will understand us. And so what we begin to think is, everything is not okay where I am. I need someone. Look again in 1 Corinthians 7. Let's look at verse 17. Paul writes in verse 17, only let each person lead the life. I'm reading the ESV. Only let each person lead the life that the Lord has assigned to him and to which God has called him. Lead the life the Lord has assigned you. Do you hear behind that? Paul is suggesting that it may be that the Lord wants you where you are. This may be what he has assigned you, maybe just for a time, for a season, but that we can learn to be content as we see God's purpose and God's working in our lives, that maybe my life will involve seasons of singleness. I might add to those who are single that many people who have rushed into marriage with the wrong person would tell you, I really wish I just stayed single a little longer, kept looking, or maybe I would be happier single than I am with this person. I fear that we're taking in a lot of cultural messaging here, that I need somebody else to make me happy. Sometimes that I have a kind of biological time bomb within me that means I just must have sex. Sometimes that the climax of my story is a wedding and a happily ever after, and until I get that, I can't have a real life. It's gotten so bad that I think sometimes we're even hesitant to say what the Bible clearly states about this, which is that some people will not or cannot have the companion or sexual partner that they want. He says that in 1 Corinthians 7 and verse 11, by the way, that those who are divorced either need to be reconciled to their mate or remain unmarried. That there is clearly in Paul's vision a lifestyle that says, this is just not a part of who I am now. I have a different calling. And we hesitate to say that because in our culture, in our time, that sounds like the worst thing you could say. So we're hesitant to say that maybe someone would live celibate, that maybe a homosexual person, if they came to Christ and follow Christ, would need to live celibate. All that. How could we call on someone to do that? Remember, Paul says, I'm living it, and I want you to live it because it's better for you. There may be times where this is the calling. Paul would say, I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. Jesus would say, some have made themselves eunuchs for the kingdom of heaven's sake. And it's a little surprising to me that we're afraid to say that, as if that is the worst thing we could ever call on someone to do. So, pursuing contentment might mean, for our single friends here, that we meet our needs for companionship and loneliness in other ways. That maybe just for now, in this situation, that's not going to be through a mate. Might I suggest the local church as an answer to loneliness? Might I suggest that there are people here who know you and understand you and want to be with you socially and connect with you? Now, I understand that doesn't replace a long-term marriage. I know that. I'm not suggesting that. I know that it doesn't undo the pain of a divorce. I know it doesn't do what a romantic relationship would do. I get that. But it is a way we can feel whole and say, I don't have to have other people in order to make my life matter. Or it might mean that if we pursue contentment, we turn our attention from the sexual things to other things that matter more than the sexual. Or it may mean that we let go of some long-held plan for our lives. We say, you know what, I just thought my life would go this way. And then, as everyone finds out, it doesn't go that way. And now we are where we are. Can I be content where I am? Pursue contentment. Second, embrace the advantages of singleness. This is an important part of Paul's argument. Paul is very pro-single, and you can see that here. I want you to read this with me. Let's start at verse 7 again. In 1 Corinthians 7:7, I wish that all were as I myself am, but each has his own gift from God, one of one kind and one of another. To the unmarried and the widows, I say that it is good for them to remain single as I am. But if they cannot exercise self-control, they should marry, for it is better to marry than to burn with passion. He says, I wish they were as I am. It is good. It is good for them to remain single. Why, Paul? Why is this so good? Drop down to verse 26. We're going to read verse 26 to 35, and I want you to hear Paul's reasoning. 26, I think that in view of the present distress, it's good for a person to remain as he is. Are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be free. Are you free from a wife? Do not seek a wife. But if you do marry, you have not sinned. And if a betrothed person marries, she has not sinned. Yet those who marry will have worldly troubles, and I would spare you that. This is what I mean, brothers. The appointed time has grown very short. From now on, let those who have wives live as though they had none, and those who mourn as though they were not mourning, and those who rejoice as those who were not rejoicing, and those who buy as though they did not have, as though they had no goods, and those who deal with the world as though they had no dealings with it, for the present form of this world is passing away. I want you to be free from anxieties. The unmarried man is anxious about the things of the Lord, how to please the Lord, but the married man is anxious about worldly things, how to please his wife, and his interests are divided. And the unmarried or betrothed woman is anxious about the things of the Lord, how to be holy in body and spirit, but the married woman is anxious about worldly things, how to please her husband. I say this for your own benefit, not to lay any restraint upon you, but to promote good order and to secure your undivided attention to the Lord. I want you to notice that Paul sees so many positives. For one, Paul compares singleness to marriage, and he says in a lot of situations, being single is better. That's in verse 28, where he says, those who marry will have worldly troubles, and I would spare you that. He says, look at both of them, and Paul had thought about it, and he says, I actually think singleness is better, especially. His point is about anxieties and freedom. Verse 32, I want you to be free from anxieties. The unmarried man is anxious about the things of the Lord, how to please the Lord. The married man is anxious about worldly things, how to please his wife, and his interests are divided. Married people have extra responsibilities. That is true. Talk to one and you'll hear it. It's a real thing. Talk to a married person. We have to consider at least one other person's schedule and feelings and opinions and money and needs at all times. And we want to please that person. He talks about that. I don't think Paul is being critical as if we're being unspiritual when we make a commitment to a man or a woman and we say, I want to be with you for the rest of our lives, and then we try to please them. That's part of the goal of marriage. But what he is saying is, if you don't sign up for that, you have a lot more freedom, and you don't have that concern on your plate. You can do other things. You are liberated to serve in new ways and to be devoted in a clean way to the Lord. I thought about this. I was talking to Sarah about it, because of course she vets most of my sermons, although don't blame her if something gets through. I'm married and I have 3 kids. And if you want to do something with me, we have been planning a small weekend trip for several months now. And we have to, in order just to plan that, we have to consider and sync 4 or 5 schedules. And we have to communicate with all of those people and arrange people and places and things and transport. And we have to pay for travel for 5 people. We don't do anything on the spur of the moment anymore. I used to, and then I got married, and then we had kids. Okay. Now, do you hear the difference? Single people have a different strategy there. They have a different calculation. And that's not to criticize one or the other. It's to say you can look at that in a critical way if you want, or you can look at it and say, boy, there's some real advantages here. That's what Paul's doing. He's saying, look, you are free from those anxieties. So instead of lamenting, oh, I wish I had this, I wish I had that, Paul says, look at the good of where you are and how it's an advantage over some other things that other people deal with. I want you to think about that. There are advantages here, and that changes the mindset. So that instead of saying, you know, oh, I'm miserable and frustrated, I wish I had someone, I'm lonely, I need this, to say, what can I do because I'm single? What can I do for the Lord? What can I do for others? If I have more money, how can I use that for good? If I have more time, how can I serve with that? If I have more freedom, what can I do with that? And I especially want to stress that Paul is saying, yes, there are benefits, but use those benefits of singleness for the Lord. Look again at verse 32. Verse 32, I want you to be free from anxieties. The unmarried man is anxious about the things of the Lord, how to please the Lord. Now notice that. That's a great thought, Paul, but it's only true if it's true, right? The unmarried man is anxious about the things of the Lord. We've got a lot of unmarried people here. Is that what's driving you? Is that your anxiety? Is that your goal? Is always to please the Lord? Are your interests really undivided the way he describes? In other words, are you using those benefits in the way God intends for you to use them? Or in verse 35, where he talks about to secure your undivided devotion to the Lord. Do you feel like your devotion to the Lord is undivided now as a single person? That's the way Paul wants you to view it and to use it. So those advantages are not just about living our best life. They are asking, are we living for the Lord? I think even those who are widowed and those who are divorced may have time and freedom they did not have before. So use it for Jesus. Who can I serve? Who can I teach? How can I encourage? How can I help? You see how Paul is saying, don't just endure this. Instead, use it for the Lord. See that there are advantages and embrace it and use it. The third thing I would say in this text is that we need to stay aware of temptations. In the background of this text, Paul is clearly thinking about the potential problems and temptations of the single life. Again, he is single. He's speaking of his own life too. Look in verse 2 with me. In 1 Corinthians 7 and verse 2, he says, but because of the temptation to sexual immorality, each man should have his own wife and each woman her own husband. The temptation to sexual immorality, he says, may mean that marriage is a better option than singleness. He says, verse 5, speaking to married people, do not deprive one another, talking about sexual, except perhaps by agreement for a limited time that you may devote yourselves to prayer, but then come together again so that Satan may not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. See, even married people can be tempted by Satan because of their lack of self-control. That's a concern, and he says that's a concern when you're single. It will still be a concern when you're married. Verse 9, if they cannot exercise self-control, they should marry, for it's better to marry than to burn with passion. So we can't talk about singleness without at least mentioning the need for self-control. Paul is a single man, and he says, singleness only works when you are able to control yourself sexually. And that is because, as I've mentioned, for Christians, singleness and celibacy go together. Christian singles are celibate, and so they must be able to control themselves. That's his point, and he says, that's going to be a temptation when we are single. Paul knows that Satan will use our relational status to tempt us to sin. And so he says, stay aware of temptation. I do not believe what Paul is saying is that we should only get married if we're sexually out of control. That would be a bad way to take the text. I do not believe that's what he's saying. I believe Paul is saying singleness is best, but some people are unable to continually handle the temptation. So stay aware. And I want to say this because I've had to say this to most of the young men here who I have had this conversation with. For a lot of young people, young singles, there is a thought that I must get married if I am unable to control myself sexually. I must. And I try to tell them what I'm about to say publicly. Getting married will not solve your sexual problems. If you are out of control sexually as a single person, you will be out of control sexually in a marriage. Remember verse 5. Verse 5 is talking to married people, and it says, you be careful about that so that Satan does not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. Same problem. New relationship doesn't solve the problem, because the problem is in me, not just in having a sexual partner. So you can see there is an awareness here. Paul is saying, look deeper than just how you feel in the moment. Look at what Satan is doing with your particular state and the challenges he will pose to you. Stay aware of those temptations. Stay humble. Stay proactive. Stay closely connected to God. If this is the life the Lord has assigned to us, then we need to look to him to resist the unique temptations that come with singleness. And that may mean, single friends, that we take extra precautions and we reach out to other people and we avoid certain places and people that tempt us in these areas, or that we actively train ourselves to resist these temptations. But whatever it means I must stay aware. And I also just want to say, and this is just a Jake's opinion, so dismiss it if you don't like it, but I think that sometimes people conclude they could never live single because they've never even tried to discipline themselves sexually. And that's not the same thing. So I would caution you about that. I will add some thoughts I have about some of the unique temptations of singleness. This is what Paul mentions in 1 Corinthians 7. But I will suggest some things, and again, these are just my suggestions. They're not scripture, but I think they're good for us to consider about the topic. I believe that there are times when we allow our loneliness and need to drive us into the arms of people who are bad for us. And I believe that's a temptation of singleness. I think that when we are single, we often focus so much on ourselves that we lose sight of all the good we can do for other people. I have some things to say to married people about that later tonight, but I'm not talking to them right now. I believe that when we're single, we sometimes become resentful. Resentful because we're not happy with where we are. I have seen that with people who become resentful of God because their spouse has died. I have seen that because people become resentful when there is a divorce they did not want, and the bitterness over that situation consumes them. I have seen that where people become resentful because God did not bring them the spouse that they wanted. And sometimes I have seen that where single people are resentful of married people because they appear to be so happy. Resentment, then, bitterness, I believe to be a major temptation of this state. Stay aware of temptation. But perhaps most of all is that we allow our frustration to become unspiritual decisions we make, whether that's about a mate, whether about what we believe, or in some other direction. Out of our hurt and frustration, we make foolish decisions. I don't know precisely what form the temptation will take for each one of us in the unique situations we're in, but rest assured, Satan will use where we are to tempt us to sin. So stay aware and reach out to others and resist him. Especially to our single brothers and sisters, I would encourage you, when you are tempted to do wrong, lean in toward people, your brothers and sisters, rather than withdrawing. Lean in to the community of Christians here. Reach out and seek help and seek understanding and seek encouragement. But along with that, married friends, you know what that means. Married friends, don't just hang out with your married friends. Listen, pay attention to your single brothers and sisters. We have to be ready to be there for them and to make time for them, even if it means you have to sync 5 schedules to do it, and to be an encouragement to them. Don't make them feel as if they are not the same as you. So how should a single Christian live? Pursue contentment, embrace the advantages of singleness, and stay aware of temptation. I have so much more to say here. I'm sure you do too. In fact, I think there's probably a lot more to say than I could possibly say. But really, if you don't get anything else from this, I would just encourage you to recast singleness as a gift and a blessing. That doesn't necessarily mean it's what we wanted. It doesn't necessarily mean it's all that we ever dreamed of, but it is a position that we may be in which we can serve the Lord. Thank you so much for your attention, and I appreciate you following along. If you have questions about this, come see me. I would love to chat with you more about it, but I want to encourage our single people, serve the Lord where you are and be content. This is the time of our worship service where we offer the invitation. We're going to sing a song. That song is intended to encourage anyone here ready to make a decision to follow Jesus or who has something in their life that they want to share with the group so that we can pray with you and help you. And so we want to encourage you now to think about those things in your life. Think about your relationship with God. Think about if something needs to change today and if you're ready to make a step toward Him, especially for those who are not Christians. If you're ready to be a disciple of Jesus today, we encourage you, turn away from your sin, confess your faith in Him,